Welcome to Dialogue Out Loud. I'm Margaret Olson Hemming, one of the incoming editors-in-chief. Our episode today is an overview of the spring 2025 issue of Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought, available now on dialoguejournal.com. Today, we'll hear from the journal subject editors and hear about what you will be able to read about in this issue. Charles Harrell's article, John Taylor on the Dark Ages, examines the traditional LDS teaching that a great apostasy led to the loss of God's priesthood authority and spiritual blessings for over 17 centuries. This doctrine portrays the period between the early Christian church and Joseph Smith's restoration as one of darkness and divine silence, a view that has strained relationships with other Christian denominations and even caused some LDS members to question its implications. Harrell also highlights how modern scholarship challenges the notion of the Middle Ages as a time of ignorance, instead recognizing it as a period of significant intellectual and artistic achievement. This contrast between historical research and LDS teachings complicates the traditional understanding of the Great Apostasy and raises questions about its interpretation. Second, we have Ryan N. Kramer's Unveiling the Invisible Hand of Providence, examining the Smith family's economic and spiritual catalysts amidst troubling times and the Panic of 1819. This piece examines the impact of apocalyptic fears and economic hardship on the early life of Joseph Smith Jr., particularly between 1809 and 1822. It argues that events such as the Panic of 1819 influenced the Smiths' family beliefs in divination, astrology, and magical practices, shaping Joseph's path to prophethood. The study focuses on the environmental and economic context of the Smiths' worldview and seeks to provide a nuanced understanding of the forces that shaped Joseph Smith's early religious development. Finally, we have Stephen Epperson's article, Armenians and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a Hauntological Exhibit. This essay reflects on the author's experience curating an exhibit on Armenian Latter-day Saints at the Museum of Church History and Art in 1993. The exhibit was intended to highlight the faith, persecution, and resilience of Armenian converts between 1884 and 1928, but was ultimately canceled due to church negotiations with the Turkish government. 30 years later, the author seeks to honor the Armenian Mormons who shared their stories by revisiting the remnants of the exhibit. Framing the project through the concept of hauntology, the essay explores how suppressed histories continue to linger, much like ghosts from the past.
Hello, everyone. I'm Charlotte Hanson-Terry, and I'm the Personal Voices editor. We have three great Personal Voice essays in the Spring 2025 issue. The first one is from Emma Toiler Stone. It's Handcart Apostasy. And in this, she examines her experience coming back to the LDS Church after 5 years. She explores the wandering that many young Mormons do. And she reflects on her grandmother, who was a collector, and considers what she has collected herself and what we bring with us in our wanderings. Next, we have a piece by Amelia Hollingsworth, God Looks Like Me, where she talks about her experience as a young mother and the impact of art on her identity and faith. She focuses on the Notre Dame Cathedral and the devotional art that spoke to her there when she visited in 2019. And she explores the importance of and need for art that features the divine feminine. And finally, we have a piece with the name withheld titled Children of the Gods Who Orgasm or Two Women Lead Me Toward Erotic Fulfillment. The author in this piece talks about two women who have been instrumental for them on the path of sexual shame, and this includes Audre Lorde and Heavenly Mother. The author talks about the erotic using Lorde's view of the erotic, which can include the sexual, and more broadly is about the power and drive toward excellence. They talk about their experiences of intellectual completeness and fulfillment and embracing their potential. All of these pieces are really great, so I'm excited for you all to be able to read them and explore them for yourselves.
Hi, I'm Teresa Wellborn, the poetry editor for Dialogue. For this issue, we have four amazing poets. The first one is Timothy Liu. His poem is entitled Golden Plates Ode. With humor, he writes about a boy prophet, about treasure digging, and sororities. The next poem is entitled A December Poem by Anita Tanner. She covers major constellations and celestial bodies. Then the poem ends with, join us to dream of something new becoming that turns about to follow Orion or some other heavenly shepherd of the sky. The next poem is Ezekiel and Walmart, and that's by Truman Burgess. I really appreciated this poem. It's like a palate cleanser from the other poems, very different. Join us for a dark day in Walmart. He touches on themes of commercialism and the passage of time. And part of the poem reads, we travel hoping to return home with new gods and plastic bags. The last poet, we have two of her poems in this issue, Maria Mortensen Davis, the first of which is entitled Dowser's Prayer. I am religious the way small desert towns are named after water. Davis employs the use of desert and thirst as a backdrop for what is missing, a lake, water, ease, and peace. And last of all, Davis's last poem is Holy Places. This is a knockout of a poem, and the ending just nails it. You'll want to check this poem out, but just to give you a little taste of what to expect, I don't want a world too wonderful to imagine. I want this one. What sacraments have I passed up on the straight and narrow freeway to salvation?
Hi, I'm Joe Plicka, and I'm the fiction editor of Dialogue, along with Ryan Shoemaker. For the spring 2025 issue of Dialogue, we are excited to share with you I Dreamed of Oil, a piece of flash fiction by award-winning LDS writer Theric Jepson, author of the novels BYUCK and Just Julie's Fine, and many other short stories and essays. In I Dreamed of Oil, a man dreams that he's anointed with holy oil consecrated by an apostle. And though he doesn't believe the apostle consecrated oil to be holier than any other blessed oil, the man suddenly discovers that he has the power to heal others, a power he's reluctant to use because of his timid nature and tenuous faith. Upon awakening, the man recognizes in the dream a powerful reminder that whether anointed or not anointed by apostle consecrated oil, he is already holy, and as we all are, holiness with the power to effect great miracles, but more than often a holiness that connects us with sister, brother, and neighbor through the simplest acts of love and kindness. It's a very short story with a very nice message.
I'm Caroline Klein, one of the book review editors for Dialogue. First, we have a review by Chad Nielsen that covers two excellent books about the Mountain Meadows Massacre. The first book is Richard E. Turley and Barbara Jones Brown's book, Vengeance is Mine, The Mountain Meadows Massacre and Its Aftermath. And the second book that this review covers is Janice Johnson's Convicting the Mormons, The Mountain Meadows Massacre in American Culture. Both these things cover the same subject, but they do take very different takes. Vengeance is Mine dives really deeply into the outcomes and repercussions of the massacre, and it discusses the attempts by local Southern Utah leaders to conceal their crime. And it even goes into the John D. Lee trial, who, of course, is the only person who was executed for the massacre. Now, Johnson's Convicting the Mormons is a very different book because it covers how the media and other individuals use the massacre as a way to characterize LDS people as uncivilized and savage. So very interesting to read this review. Another review that we have is by Brendan Rensink, and it is of Amy Tanner Theriot's book, Slavery in Zion, A Documentary and Genealogical History of Black Lives and Black Servitude in Utah Territory, 1847 to 1862. So this book sets out to explore the 100 or so Black individuals who ended up in Utah during this time period and to narrate their experiences of slavery and servitude. So clearly, this is an important book in bringing to light the lives of people who have often just not been discussed in historical work. Lastly, we have Colby Townsend, who reviews Christine Blythe's and Christopher Blythe's and Jay Burton's edited volume, which is called Open Canon, Scriptures of the Latter-day Saint Tradition. Now, this is a collection of essays about canonical traditions of several of the religious groups that make up the broader Mormon movement. And it often delves into groups that most of us know very little about. So this book is certainly making a contribution to the field because it's presenting new information that a lot of people just don't know about.
Hi, I'm Andrew Hall. I am the literature book review editor here at Dialogue. And I have four books that I'm going to talk about the reviews in this issue. First one is Ryan Habermeyer's Salt Folk, a review by Jacob L. Bender. Habermeyer has had several stories published here in Dialogue. He does very experimental stories that often are fantastical. And this is a collection of somewhat linked short stories set in and around Utah that is in a climate crisis, far into a climate crisis. And it has a variety of odd people in odd situations and who are dealing with basically the end of the world, the destruction of the world. Bender, who's also an experimental author himself, talks about how he compares this book to the Book of Mormon, which is also apocalyptic. You know, it shows the end of a civilization. But the final editor, Moroni, stubbornly insists on the absolute necessity of hope. While in Habermeyer's book, there's not a lot of hope. It's people called salt folk, and they're kind of like Lot's wife, who's been transformed into a pillar of salt and kind of paralyzed into inaction. But still, a fascinating look at a kind of Utah view of climate change. Then we have a review of three books of poetry by feminist poets. The three poets are Heather Harris Bergevin, whose book is Catabasis, Susan Elizabeth Howe's Infinite Disguises, and Darlene Young's Here. And all three books are reviewed by Danielle Dubrasky. And she says, to review these three books together is to be invited into a trio of Mormon feminist poetics that explores how poetry can transcend time and delve into spaces of origin, how it can restore the severed dyad of mother and child, and how it can insistently defy ancient stories that define contemporary attitudes about gender. Then we have Martine Leavitt's young adult novel, Buffalo Flats, which is reviewed by Mick Johnson. So Leavitt is a very well-regarded young adult author, nationally published. Has had lots of great novels, but has never really addressed Mormon themes before. She's a Mormon author. But this is her first one that looks at LDS people, and it's about pioneers in the Canada's Northwest Territories in the 1890s, territory now known as Alberta. And focusing on a 18-year-old young woman who wants to own her own land and be a leader in her community and the barriers that's in her way and how she pushes forward. And it's a love song to the pioneers, the LDS pioneers, especially to the women who lived during this period. And she creates a space for the good, the bad, and the ugly, but mostly the good of our pioneer ancestors, and does so with spellbinding prose and a superb story. And then finally, we have Mason Allred's Seeing Things, Technologies of Vision and the Making of Mormonism, reviewed by Rosemary Avance. And this is one of several books recently about media in LDS spaces. Gavin Feller had one called Eternity in the Ether, A Mormon Media History. And the reviewer, Rosemary, has one coming up soon called Media Mormons, Shifting Religious Identities in the Digital Age. So she says this is a haunting must-read that will leave you ghost hunting across other lanes of media history. If Allred focuses on some case studies to investigate how Mormons have interpreted and engaged with a shared reality through the lens of various screen technologies, including print, canvas, glass plates, and magic lanterns, type, film, microfilm, and television. So he goes way back into LDS history, looking at how these different technologies have impacted and been used in LDS spaces. And that's it for me.
We also have a sermon for this issue by Jason Steffen. Stefan reflects on the joy of Easter while acknowledging the sorrow, fear, and struggles that can make it difficult for some to fully rejoice. It emphasizes that, like Christ's disciples who ministered to him after his death, we too are called both to serve others and to allow ourselves to be served. Finally, it warns against the dangers of judgment and nostalgia, urging us instead to embrace humility, grace, and the understanding that we are all dependent on Christ's mercy. This is a wonderful sermon for this time of the year when we are leading up to Holy Week. And finally, as the art editor, I'd like to share the artist for this issue, who is José da Faria, a Portuguese artist who works primarily in oils and acrylics. His colorful, maximalist paintings pull viewers in and engage them with thousands of details while he plays with color and form. Da Faria is a member of the artistic cooperative Arvor and the Académie des Arts Sciences Lettres in Paris, as well as the National Society of Fine Arts in Lisbon. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We're really excited about this issue, and we hope you'll check it out. You can find this and all past issues of the journal at dialoguejournal.com. A few years ago, the Dialogue Foundation made the decision to make all our issues freely available without a paywall. If you'd like to support the journal, you can do so by subscribing or donating. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on upcoming podcasts and events. We'll see you next time.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.